the resistance, and as well, I believe that Iran, if they will conduct any attack in response towards Israel, I believe that Israel will actually rethink about what they have done, and they will stop immediately.
All right, we're going to end it there. Thank you very much, Hossein Abokhaiti, activist and political commentator from Sana'a. Sakina Datu, thank you. Journalist, author, and producer from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitaway and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. And when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Death toll for more than 6 months of Israel's indiscriminate bombings of the Gaza Strip tops 33,600. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has targeted Israeli positions in occupied territories with a barrage of rockets. And the UK government comes under fire from human rights groups for refusing to end its arms sales to the Israeli regime amid its ongoing campaign of genocide in Gaza. And now the Israeli military's unrelenting attacks on Gaza continue to claim more civilian lives. At least 29 people were killed when a home in central Gaza was hit, and another 20 people lost their lives in Israeli strikes in other parts of the coastal sliver. Israeli forces also targeted a number of journalists in the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. According to medical sources, one of the journalists is now in critical condition. More than 33,600 people have been killed in Gaza since Israel began its genocidal campaign on October 7th. Thousands are still missing. A Geneva-based human rights organization has estimated over 13,000 Gazans are unaccounted for. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor says many of those missing are either under rubble or buried in indiscriminate mass graves. Joining us now from Gaza is Moti Abu Musaba. Hello, Moti. Good morning. Hope you're safe and doing well. What's the latest on the ground there, pal?
Yes, actually, the Israeli warplanes continued decimating and destroying Gaza Strip with more air strikes here in the central area of Gaza Strip. The Israeli warplanes carried a relentless Israeli airstrike against a residential building here in Deir el-Balah city that destroyed the house completely in Abu Arif neighborhood located in the central area of Deir el-Balah city, particularly when it comes to Nusayrat refugee camp. Another residential building was destroyed over those airstrikes. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery maintained its shelling towards the northern part of Nusayrat refugee camp, knowing that those areas were or have been under heavy bombardments for three consecutive days. Till this moment, as we speak, the Israeli artillery is still maintaining its shelling towards those areas, inflicting more destruction and the buildings and the residential buildings in that place particularly. When it comes to Gaza City, the Israeli warplanes also resumed their attacks against different parts and different residential neighborhoods, including Al-Zaytun and Al-Tufah and Al-Daraj neighborhoods. They were under heavy bombardments and airstrikes over the last night. And in the same time, the Israeli warplanes destroyed a multi-floor building near Al-Samer Crossroad, which is located in the central area of Gaza City. That building was completely destroyed to the ground. As a result of that attack, a big fire engulfed that residential building in that area. While when it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes also renewed their strikes and attacks against the residential buildings, particularly in the eastern part of Jabalia refugee camp and Beit Hanun city. Several amphibious Israeli airstrikes hit those areas, leaving more residential buildings and houses destroyed and devastated. In the meantime, when it comes to Khan Yunis city, as you know, that the medical staff and the civil defense crews still this moment are working on extracting more dead bodies and corpses which were left behind the massive destruction that inflicted by the Israeli occupation forces in that area over the last 24 hours. 10 Palestinian dead bodies were extracted from the rubble of those destroyed houses, particularly in Al-Amal neighborhood located in the western part of Khan Yunis city. So the current situation is still tense across all areas of Gaza Strip, basically here in the central area of Gaza Strip and Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, where the Israeli military operation is still underway with more relentless attacks against that area.
And Moti, some of these images that we see of the city of Khan Yunis, it's just appalling, the level of destruction. It's unbelievable when we see these images. Is there any part of Khan Yunis that's untouched? Seems like half the city, if not more, has been completely leveled, possibly under a carpet bombing campaign by the Israelis.
Yes, absolutely. What happened in Khan Yunis is horrific, because as you know that for roughly 4 consecutive months and the Israeli occupation forces have been attacking and were attacking that area, including the aerial, the land, and even the sea attacks from the sea. The entire residential buildings were destroyed. We are talking about entire residential squares that were wiped out of the map. 80%, according to the estimates, that 80% of the house units and the constructions and the buildings in Khan Yunis city were completely or partially destroyed, knowing that Khan Yunis was the second largest city in Gaza Strip. So now Khan Yunis was literally reduced to be the city of rubble. Wherever you turn your eyes in Khan Yunis city, you would observe and see the rubble and the mounds of debris left behind those constant and chronic attacks that were hitting that area. What happened in Khan Yunis is indescribable, unbelievable, because everything was reached by the Israeli occupation forces on the ground, or by the Israeli warplanes, was destroyed completely, including the infrastructure, the streets, the residential buildings, the health facilities. Everything was destroyed. Khan Yunis was completely reduced to be an unlivable place after, as I've mentioned, it was the second largest city in Gaza Strip. And apparently, and according to the people, basically, and the residents of Khan Yunis city, that destruction was completely incentivized, and the Israeli occupation forces were incentivized by the desire of vengeance against Khan Yunis city, basically, because as you know, Khan Yunis, Yahya Sinwar is basically from Khan Yunis city, so they were attacking Khan Yunis city under their aim in order to destroy that city completely as a collective punishment to the people and that city particularly.
All right, thank you, Moti. We'll talk to you soon. Checking with you. Moti Abu Musawa, they're updating us from the besieged Gaza Strip. The Palestinian resistance forces have launched fresh attacks on several Israeli cities and settlements in occupied territories. The Al-Quds Brigade, the military wing of Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, says its forces have carried out the attacks. The resistance fighters have targeted the city of Sidarat and several other settlements surrounding Gaza with multiple rockets. Now, there's been no report yet of damage or fatalities. The Islamic Jihad movement said attacks are in response to Israel's crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. A USAF car comes under fire in northern Gaza earlier this week on its way to deliver aid to malnourished children. This was the latest incident of targeting aid groups by Israeli forces in Gaza, where people are already starving due to the regime's restrictions on the entry of aid. Now let's take a listen to UNICEF spokesperson explaining how this attack unfolded.
I was in that car that was hit. It was waiting at a holding point just south of the Wadi Gaza checkpoint, where we are often instructed to wait before being called through the checkpoint. We were waiting there as instructed, and gunfire broke out in the vicinity. It seemed to be coming from the direction of the checkpoint towards civilians, who then turned and fled from the checkpoint. Luckily, myself and my colleagues, we were all safe, but this just underscores how dangerous it is for humanitarian aid workers in Gaza at the moment, that incidents like this continue to happen when they absolutely shouldn't. We decided to go ahead because it was such a critical mission, with nutrition products for the children who are malnourished in the north of Gaza, among other things. Unfortunately, after deciding that we would go ahead, we were still delayed. We waited at that holding point for at least another 2 hours before deciding that the mission was no longer feasible, because we didn't have enough time, even if we were given the green light, to go up, conduct all of our activities, and then get. It's tragic to see anybody suffering from malnutrition, which is such a painful condition, let alone in a place where malnutrition was almost non-existent before October. And it's now skyrocketed in the north of Gaza because of disruptions to food production, but also because of restrictions on aid access to that area. We've really struggled to get up there with aid. And as a result, we know that children are dying of malnutrition there. At least 23 children have reportedly died at the Kamal Adwan Hospital, which is where we were trying to bring these nutrition treatments on Tuesday.
People in the occupied West Bank have held a funeral for two Palestinians killed in an Israeli raid. Two Palestinians were killed in city of Tubas, the northeast of the occupied West Bank. Mohammed Rasul Daragme was killed after occupying forces opened fire on his vehicle. Elsewhere in the central West Bank, armed Israeli settlers attacked two villages near the city of Ramallah, killing one Palestinian and injuring over 20 others. The settlers also set dozens of Palestinian cars and homes on fire. There's been a drastic rise in number of attacks by Israeli forces and settlers against Palestinians in the West Bank since the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza. Since then, at least 462 Palestinians have been killed throughout occupied territories. We have breaking news. According to Australian police, multiple people have reportedly been stabbed at a Sydney shopping center. Seems like it's a mass stabbing taking place. Possibly still an active stabber on the scene there in Sydney. As soon as this gets developed, we'll get out to you accordingly. Meanwhile, our correspondent in Ramallah joined us earlier with more details about Israeli settler attacks on a village near Ramallah that killed a Palestinian man and left several injured. Here's Mona Candiel.
A third Palestinian has been killed by the Israelis this day, but this time Israeli settlers had killed a young Palestinian man, Jihad Afif Abu Aliya, from the village of Al Mghayr, northeast Ramallah. The Israeli settlers had raided the village of Al Mghayr, and they attacked Palestinians and their vehicles, their homes. They burnt properties, they burnt vehicles, they opened fire at the residents of Al Mghayr, killing one Palestinian and wounding 18 others. At the same time, Israeli forces stormed Al Mghayr, in order, of course, to make sure that the settlers are not being attacked or hurt by the Palestinians there, and at the same time to continue attacking the Palestinians there. Why the Israeli settlers had been raiding Al-Mughayyar, it's not the first time. The Israeli settlers continue to storm these areas, northeast Ramallah, like Al-Mughayyar, Tirmus'aya, Sinjal, and these Palestinian towns and villages are located very close to the illegal settlements that are built on the Palestinian lands. The Israeli authorities claim that a shepherd settler was still missing since the early hours of Friday, and the search is still continuing. They could not, of course, find this settler.
Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah and Israeli forces once again exchanged fire as the southern Lebanese border remains tense over the onslaught on Gaza. Hezbollah says it fired dozens of rockets towards occupied Palestine as well as occupied Golan Heights. This after Israeli warplanes targeted several Lebanese villages and towns. And earlier, for our update, we swung over to our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh.
Definitely, basically keeping things at a low profile. There was low intensity operations from Lebanon, but we noticed that from the Israeli side, the shelling continued, and we saw an intensification today where they launched and targeted several houses in Ayn Tashah, but also in the town of Taibe, which is still one of the towns that is inhabited. It has not been displaced. It has not been evacuated. It's not a bordering town. So Hezbollah basically made a stance with what we heard from the launching of the Katyusha rockets. Hezbollah has mentioned in their statement that they said tens of rockets were launched towards the barracks of Zaoura. Zaoura is one of the main barracks where the Israelis basically launch their artillery. It's a launching site. They have many vehicles over there, artillery vehicles especially. They're usually also Merkava tanks in that barrack specifically. So basically it's a very large military parking lot for their artillery vehicles. Hezbollah made it clear that they are ready to make that stance and to retaliate for the targeting of areas that are considered residential and civilian, although we did not see, we don't have clear casualties from the civilian population, but still in itself, when the Israelis target a civilian house and it is destroyed, then Hezbollah does retaliate in that manner. And we saw that Hezbollah also have taken things a little bit further. After this targeting, they issued some four statements saying that they launched several operations during the day. So after some de-escalation, now we see that the resistance in Lebanon has gone back to the same routine of continuous heavy firing against Israeli targets, whether in the Golan Heights or in occupied Palestinian territory, in occupied Lebanese territory. We have two operations in the Kfar Shuba Hills, the Lebanese occupied Kfar Shuba Hills in Al Samaka.
Iran's foreign minister says Tehran has always acted constructively in regional issues and paid a huge price in order to ensure the stability and a sustainable security of West Asia. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark during a phone call with his Italian counterpart. He also urged Italy to use its presidency at the G7 group of countries to try and end Israel's onslaught and campaign of genocide in Gaza. Antonio Tajani, for his part, stated that Italy, alongside the European Union, has condemned Israel's attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus, Syria, but has called on the Islamic Republic to exercise restraint. And Jordanians have once again taken to the streets in solidarity with Palestinians as anger mounts over U.S.-Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Protesters in the capital Amman waved Palestinian and Jordanian flags and condemned Israel's actions in Gaza. They also called for an immediate ceasefire. People in Bahrain also took to the streets to voice support for Palestinians and resistance groups. Protesters denounced normalization of ties between the ruling Al-Khalifa regime and Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, the Irish and Spanish leaders in a joint presser in Dublin affirmed their commitment to recognize Palestine as a state as soon as possible.
The international community will not be able to help Palestine if it does not recognize its existence. That is why our two countries are publicly committed to recognize Palestine as a state as soon as possible, when the conditions are appropriate. And we also pledge to support the recognition of Palestine as a full member state of the United Nations.
The Israeli ambassador to Ireland has said that's recognized.
Sanchez also said Spain and Ireland agree on the urgency of an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and delivery of humanitarian aid to Palestinians. Also, the Irish Prime Minister said his country is now much closer to recognition of a Palestinian state. Ireland and Spain have repeatedly signaled their intention to recognize Palestine's statehood. The Spanish Premier is now on a European tour to try to drum up support for the move. Earlier, Norway's Prime Minister echoed the sentiment that such a decision will need to be taken in close coordination with like-minded nations. That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
In the limelight.
Thanks to the heroic Operation Al-Aqsa Storm of October 7th, 2023, American hypocrisy has also been fully exposed to the whole world. And no matter what hostile posture the regime in Washington adopts against the Axis of Resistance and the Islamic Republic of Iran, the cobweb called Israel will definitely be wiped off the map of West Asia region. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kayhan International wrote, in June 1967, during the Six-Day War, the illegal Zionist entity vanquished four national armies of Arab states, neighboring Palestine and occupied territories, more than double its illegitimate size. The northern part of Syria's Golan Heights, the area south of Lebanon's River Litani, the entire region west of River Jordan, including the Islamic holy city of Beit al-Muqaddas, and Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, after overrunning in a few hours the then Egyptian-administered Gaza sliver. Today, over 66 years later, usurper Israel is struggling for the past 6 months to reoccupy the barely 40 kilometers long and hardly 10 kilometers wide Gaza Strip, even after bombing to death more than 33,000 civilians, mostly women and children, as well as medics, journalists, refugees, and international relief workers, severely injuring 80,000 others and destroying the entire infrastructure, including schools, hospitals, mosques, and churches, but miserably failing to achieve its goal of wiping out the Palestinian liberation movement. sources, some 1,500 Zionists, including top commanders, have been killed by Gaza's resistance forces, who have also destroyed scores of Merkava tanks and over 100 armored carriers, besides continuing their rocket barrages on several towns and cities of the 1948 occupied parts of Palestine. It is clear the victors of the Washington-directed genocide of the Gazans are not the child-killing regime and its terrorist backer, genocidal Joe, U.S. President Joe Biden, but the victims of the Holocaust themselves and the Palestinian liberation movements such as Hamas and Islamic Jihad. This is the undeniable reality of the current conflict, which has awakened the public conscience of the entire world, especially of the long-deceived people of North America and West Europe, who since the planting of the Zionist entity in the heart of the Muslim world had been tricked into sympathizing with usurper Israel. The taxpayers no longer want their hard-earned money to be siphoned off for the survival of spurious states and its devilish regime, which is the enemy of all humanity and humanitarian values. In other words, the end of the illegal Zionist entity whose very establishment was and is against the tenets of Judaism is near. This is the reason the US regime is sending hundreds of billions of dollars lethal weapons to the Zionist entity in the vain hope of averting the inevitable, while sending its overinflated navy to the Red Sea to try to deter Yemen from helping the persecuted Palestinian people by blocking vessels bound for Omer Ashrash Port, Eilat, on the Gulf of Aqaba. Thanks to the heroic Operation Al-Aqsa Storm of October 7, 2023, American hypocrisy has also been fully exposed to the whole world. And no matter what hostile posture the regime in Washington adopts against the axis of resistance and the Islamic Republic of Iran, the cobweb called Israel will definitely be wiped off of the map of the West Asia region. Meanwhile, the Electronic Intifada wrote, "In Gaza, if you get sick, you either wait for God's mercy or wait for your death. There is little to nothing by way of treatment. If every Palestinian in Gaza spoke about their loss and suffering, the sea would run dry before these stories could end. Palestinians have lost their cities and towns with their memories, streets, schools, mosques, and churches. Both Gaza's history and present are being wiped out. In the heart of every challenge lies the seed of hope, and amid every tragedy, the strength of resilience and willpower shines through. Despite the many wounds, Gaza's story remains full of tenderness, strength, and hope. Gaza has faced the harshest conditions, yet it has not surrendered or stopped dreaming of a better tomorrow. In each of its people lies the courage of a struggle and a desire to build a future that restores Gaza's charm and peace. Resilience and determination to live with dignity burns within Palestinians in Gaza, and with each passing day, hope is somehow maintained and the will to move forward grows despite all the hardships."
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you. visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Netanyahu making a mistake on Gaza, according to U.S. President Joe Biden, and Britain's Rishi Sunak calls the situation increasingly intolerable. But what now as Gazans experience Eid under genocidal assault? This is Gaza Under Attack with me, Amina Taylor, and let's get up to speed with the latest developments relating to the ongoing genocide. Global Eid celebrations have taken on a more somber tone this year. Palestinians inside Gaza have marked the period that should have seen celebrations after Ramadan, still under bombardment, many grieving martyred relatives and friends. Despite the UN Security Council voting in favor of a ceasefire, Israeli strikes on Gazans have instead intensified. Netanyahu has brushed aside global condemnation and pledged no force in the world will stop his plans to continue the offensive into Rafah, where hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are seeking shelter from the IOF assault. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has held talks with his British counterpart David Cameron, where the Gazan question was front and center. Both men reiterated calls for a conditional ceasefire. Meanwhile, Tel Aviv has escalated its saber-rattling against Iran, with the foreign minister saying Israel will attack the Islamic Republic directly. There's been an increase in tensions after Israel struck the Iranian consular building in the Syrian capital, Damascus, causing multiple casualties and eliciting international condemnation. Since October 2023, over 34,000 Palestinian men, women and children have been killed, with over 76,000 wounded and thousands more missing, presumed dead. With us for this edition of Gaza Under Attack in the studio, Charles Kelly, a financial podcaster and analyst. And joining us from Skype from Scotland is Mick Napier. Mick is a dedicated anti-racism campaigner and a member of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Good of you all to join us. So, Charles, we're 187 days plus into this bombardment of Gaza. There'll be so many people, especially in history, wondering how we got to this historical low point. Your own reflections.
I think we're in a very dangerous time in history. We've got these leaders who just seem to want to take us to war. I mean, there's an old saying, when all else fails, they take you to war. And, you know, we've seen it not just in Gaza, but in Ukraine. Remember that one, Ukraine, still going on. Sudan and Yemen and
DRC, I mean, yeah. Yes.
And Biden saber-rattling against China and Taiwan, when it's really nothing to do with America. And, you know, we get escalations in that part of the world. The AUKUS, Japan joining that now. So it's a very dangerous time, and while in the West we're going about our business, really, we're just getting on with life, you know, we're going out shopping and the stock market's doing okay and house prices seem to be on the move again, interest rates are down and people think everything's back to normal. And, you know, they're just going about watching movies, booking Taylor Swift tickets and the news covers a little bit and then it goes on to other things. But people should be aware that we're in dangerous times and these leaders could bring us to the brink of World War III.
Mick, dangerous times. What's your assessment?
I agree with every word. This is the most dangerous time. I am more fearful today about general politics than at any time in the last half century, because all the tectonic plates are moving. And at the center of that movement is, of course, the genocide in Gaza. I mean, in a sense, it was entirely predicted. Nobody could have predicted the detail. A day before the 7th of October, it very much looked as if people in Gaza would live and die in a big concentration zone. And their children would live and die, and their grandchildren would live and die in a big concentration zone until the Israelis found an opportunity to remove them. And then everything changed. The Palestinian resistance challenged the idea that Israel is unchallengeable. They inflicted a swinging military defeat upon the much vaunted Israeli military with the most high-tech equipment in the world, and changed the situation forever. And we see now the Palestinians paying a huge price. But in terms of colonialism, in terms of a colonizing and dispossessing project, and the Palestinians were always doomed to be removed at one time or another, it was difficult to see how the Palestinians could even fight back. It has been the case for a very long time that Palestinians had won the most decisive battle, and quite decisively, that is, for world public opinion, that Israel was, in terms of what people actually think by their million, a pariah state, regardless of the sustained support from our governments. When popular opinion was measured, the Israeli ambassador to Britain said there was a crisis. Various other tanks said there was a huge crisis in terms of public hostility to Israel, which could cause problems for state-to-state relations. Now, we're not there yet. Here in Scotland, the First Minister has condemned Israeli ethnic cleansing. He doesn't use the word genocide because he knows the implications of that, and has called yet again for an arms embargo, although there's no power there to enforce it. But we see up and down the country, we see a million people marching through London. It was unprecedented. We've never seen anything even half that size before. We see people shutting down Israeli arms factories, the third one of the Elbit factory several weeks ago. And we see an increase in the determination of a large number of people to move from just waiting, just demonstrating, to taking direct action against targets. So I think that the genocide is built in to the DNA of Zionism. It's the DNA of any settler colonialism. But yes, everyone knows, everyone can see that if Israel succeeds in ethnically cleansing Gaza, then the West Bank and inside 48-67 Israel will follow. And Israel also has an appetite perhaps to change the regime in Jordan, war with Lebanon, and of course the shameless attack on a diplomatic
indeed, and Mick, I know the Iranian question will resume, and I'll touch base on that with you after we discuss the two main protagonists here, because U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken discussed the Israeli bombardments of Gaza during the meeting he had with the British Foreign Secretary David Cameron on Tuesday. Now, the two ministers talked about efforts to reach a sustainable ceasefire and get more aid into Gaza. This meeting comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu escalated his pledge to invade Rafah. Let's listen in.
We, of course, discussed the situation in the Middle East and in Gaza. Israel has made important commitments to significantly increase the supply of humanitarian assistance throughout Gaza, and has taken some initial actions as well to move on those commitments. We're looking at a number of critical things that need to happen in the coming days, including opening a new northern point of entry for assistance into Gaza, using Ashdod on a regular basis, maximizing the flow of assistance from Jordan, as well as putting in place a much more effective deconfliction mechanism with the humanitarian groups that are providing assistance.
Anthony Blinken there, the U.S. Secretary of State. Charles, during that same press conference, David Cameron mentioned that he will, as far as he's concerned, continue the arms sales to Israel, despite the fact that hundreds of British legal experts have written to the Prime Minister to say, you are breaking international law here and you are in danger of facilitating a genocide.
That's true. They don't seem to care about these international cases.
Pesky international.
Yes, that'll get off me. Because they've got no teeth, and so they're not worried about these cases going on. And it just seems like, again, it's this move towards war, whether it's coming from America, Britain, or some force above them. They just seem to be pushing us towards that. And of course, countries have a vested interest in selling weapons. It's a big part of their economy. But I don't know why they're not backing off. And Labour do not seem to be on the same vein. They're not talking about stopping arms, sale of arms to Israel either. And I know we're going to talk about the Germany case as well. But it just baffles me that these people... I mean, I was sitting here, the last time I was sitting here, Biden was talking about a ceasefire within days. The following week, he said there'll be a ceasefire. But I mean, all the time they're talking and chatting and, you know, people are dying every day. And I just wonder how they would feel if it was their family that were dying out there. Maybe they would feel differently. But at the moment, they seem happy to just talk and discuss this and discuss that while everyday people are dying. And Netanyahu is just... I don't know if the guy is a psychopath or what, but he's a very dangerous person, hanging on to his political career, of course.
By the skin of his teeth, yeah. Some might say, Mick Napier. And the idea here that we've had regional fears about an escalation, and then we saw that provocation with the Israeli attack on the Iranian consular building in outside Damascus, Syria. Just give me your feel on that, and what is actually in this? If you were perhaps Tel Aviv, what's the motivation here?
I think the motivation is, one, ethnically cleanse all of Palestine, of pretty much all Palestinians. But there's also an existential fear, as well as a great violence at the heart of the Zionist project. I mean, 7 million or 6 million Zionist Jews are surrounded by hundreds of millions of Arabs and other Middle Eastern people who can switch on their television and see people being slaughtered because they're not Jewish. And that's burning very deeply into the psyche. In a very real sense, the Zionists, the degree of violence, the genocidal nature of it, the fact that they want to be seen, the fact that there's no great problem when Israeli soldiers film themselves committing obscene acts of torture and brutality and jeering and sneering at murder, that they've emptied the intensive care unit by everyone dying and all the neonatal units as well. All that, I think, stems from the fact that Israel knows that ultimately they don't have a great future in the region, that 7 million cannot prevail against 200-300 million indefinitely. But in order to extend the life of the Zionist project, they need to instill terror. They need to send a message that they're kind of crazy, that they are ready to drop, as they have done, more tonnage on Gaza than were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki together. They are capable of any barbarism, and I think that stems from the DNA of the Zionist project to build an exclusively Jewish state in the middle of the Middle East as an extension of Western power into that region. So I think, given that they failed to defeat the Hamas and Islamic Jihad in a very short time, what do? They have to raise the ante. And I think the desire for a regional war is not shared by Blinken and Biden at the moment, but I think it would get Netanyahu and the Zionist elite out of the pickle that they've got themselves into, because they haven't won in Gaza in the simple sense that for a military army like Israel's to win, they have to crush and defeat the enemy. For irregular forces like the Palestinian resistance to win, they merely have to survive. That's the lesson of all anti-colonial struggles. And I think we are seeing Israel failing to win, as they failed in 2006. And I think why Biden and Blinken are angry is Israel has failed, and that's the only crime that Washington actually acknowledges, when they failed to terrorize the region effectively. But it's very dangerous, because they will now up the ante.
With more lives, obviously, hanging in the balance there. Well, the holy month of Ramadan was supposed to bring a ceasefire in Gaza, but Israel actually escalated the offensive, and has also gone on a killing rampage on Eid, normally a joyous time to celebrate the end of the holy month. Now, we asked the pro-Palestinian activist in London, Zebunisa Rao, why she thinks that ceasefire didn't hold.
Israel does not want to. It has the ironclad support of the loudest governments in the West. It has laid out plans and will not stop until its aims are complete, unless it is stopped. The UNSC resolution for Ramadan was passed on 25th of March, 15 days into Ramadan. The US abstained, while John Kirby the White House National Security spokesperson, told reporters, "Our vote does not, and I repeat that, does not represent a shift in our policy." Biden signed off on $4 billion more in weapons for Israel to further the genocide. On the following day, March the 26th, the U.S. passed a bill where it mentioned that it will limit funding to the West Bank and Gaza if the Palestinian Authority obtains UN statehood, or if it allows or supports any war crime investigation against Israel at the ICC. Israel has a blatant disregard for authority of any kind, even for the hand that feeds it. According to Article 25 UN Charter, ratified by the U.S., all UNSC resolutions are binding and not optional. In December 2016, UNSC passed a resolution deeming Israel's settlements in Palestine to be illegal and a violation of international law. Israel ignored this resolution. In December 2023, the UN General Assembly voted with an overwhelming majority to call for a humanitarian ceasefire. Israel refused to act on it. Israel Knesset member Almog Cohen said during Ramadan, "Now is the best time to kill them." Israeli Heritage Minister Amichai Eliyahu said the so-called month of Ramadan must be wiped out, and our fear of this month must also be wiped out. Leaflets were dropped into the West Bank wishing a happy Ramadan and warning against even thinking against Israel or taking part in protests. Israel has stated repeatedly that it would not comply with any orders and that it will escalate in Ramadan, and this is unsurprising.
Zebenisa also said the UN can bring the genocide in Gaza to an end if it wanted to.
Israel has historically defied orders of the highest authority time and time again. What else do we expect it to do in the future? The next step after Israel defies a binding resolution would be to suspend it from the UN, and when it continues defying it, for it to be expelled. I'm sure they won't bite a bat an eyelid. The US and the UK are ready to wage war at the drop of a hat anywhere in the world. The UK nation was asked to bravely tighten our belts as we weaponized Ukraine against Russia, and now Israel. So why have these governments not helped arm the people of Gaza? Why are world leaders afraid to unite in a simple military defensive stance for a nation of people who are unarmed, unprotected, and experiencing a slow and gradual physical decimation in the face of total annihilation? Although the UN appears sloth-like, yet similar to a sloth, it does have teeth and claws. In 1948, the UN Security Council authorized the deployment of UN military observers to monitor the armistice agreement between Israel and its Arab neighbors. Many options can be availed for military presence, but the fastest option is immediate Air Force contingents. According to the UN Charter, action with respect to threats to the peace, breaches of the peace, and acts of aggression, Article 45, states, in order to enable the UN to take urgent military measures, members shall hold immediately available national Air Force contingents for combined international enforcement action. But the complication is that the P5 member states, US, Great Britain, Russia, China and France, must come to a collective will for these actions to happen.
Eid is a more somber affair in Gaza this year as Palestinians continue to live under occupation and the specter of genocide. After morning prayers, Muslims often visit the graves of deceased loved ones during a three-day festival that marks the end of the holy fasting month of Ramadan. A Gazan imam shares why nothing is as usual this time around.
This Eid is completely different from previous Eids in the Gaza Strip. This Eid is full of sacrifices, pain, wounds, the blood of martyrs, the bombing of homes, and the terrorization of safe people. However, we are in the Gaza Strip despite these massacres, these pains, and a large number of martyrs, and most recently last night in the Nusayrat camp. We honor God's rituals on this great and blessed day, and we rejoice and make our children happy on this day.
Just time enough for the final thoughts of Charles Kelly and Mick Napier on a few moments we have left on this show. And before we went to that series there, Charles, we talked about the perhaps perceived toothlessness of the United Nations. At the moment, there's currently a case that's been brought by Nicaragua along the same lines as the South African case, this time against Germany for what Nicaragua is arguing is facilitating the genocide by continuing to sell arms to Israel. Give me your thoughts on that. Will it go any way differently to the ICJ case with South Africa that's currently being considered?
I think it's helpful in a sense that it brings attention to countries like Germany, and it's educational, but I can't see it going that far. I mean, there was a barrister talking about just things like, you know, it's ironic that Germany is dropping aid by planes into Gaza while at the same time supplying arms that is causing the problem. And it's a terrible situation. The people of Gaza, I saw footage of them celebrating Eid, and you've got to admire their faith to go out and still try and carry on with some sort of normality. But meanwhile, it's a very dark situation for them, and with, you know, Netanyahu promising to go into Rafah. I mean, why this guy is prime minister, I just don't know. His comeback from fraud charges to becoming prime minister again is on a par with the comeback of Lazarus, isn't it? Because what is he, the comeback kid or something? How he can be in power? And now, of course, he needs the war to stay in power. And it's a horrendous situation for the rest of the world, as well as Gaza.
Well, some people are hoping he'll be the Haig kid after this. Mick Napier, the idea here that, as I mentioned in the introduction, Netanyahu says no force in the world will stop this Rafah offensive. It's nonsensical, isn't it?
It's based on his always being able to publicly defy condemnation from the EU, from the UN, but condemnations that rested all at words. And he doesn't care if the whole world recognises that he's a criminal and the whole Zionist elite has long been committed to ethnic cleansing and full-spectrum criminality, as long as there are no effective sanctions. They only respond to force. The problem with the UN is, of course, it's designed in such a way that America and Britain and others can paralyse any action against their interests. I mean, I would like to carry water in a bucket, but if there's a big hole in it, then it's not much use as a bucket. And the UN suffers from a structural weakness of the same kind. We are now at a situation where governments are embarrassed by Israel, but they continue to send bombs together with the criticism. They continue to send bombs and ask for a kinder, gentler genocide. But around the world, Europe is fantastically isolated. We see the Houthis in Yemen coming to the aid of the people of Gaza facing genocide, acting on international law, acting to do everything within their power to end that genocide, and being bombed by Britain and America. But here's the question. Why didn't the US carpet bomb Yemen as they carpet bombed Vietnam with B-52s? They could wipe out everybody. Because they're afraid. They realise that they're in a situation where if they inflame popular opinion throughout the region sufficiently, then they will be defeated. And I think that the resistance across the region, Yemen, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, everywhere, that's the key to victory. And that, backed up by an increasingly angry world public opinion, which can force a political price on our rulers, that's the key to victory. Otherwise, Israel will ultimately generate a huge regional war which will have cataclysmic suffering for all of us. It was built into the very DNA of the Zionist project to displace millions of local people to make way for European Zionists.
Indeed, and Charles, last thoughts to you here. We're seeing these weekly demonstrations, one coming up in London at the end of this week. Are they working? Are they changing hearts and minds? Less than a minute.
I think gradually they are, and I mean, Mick mentioned Zionism, and of course, Zionists are not confined to just Jewish people only. The culture of Zionism is embedded into the US culture, the education system, our culture, our Judeo-Christian culture, and Zionism is embedded into that. And, you know, it is starting to change the hearts and minds, and Mick also mentioned about the Arab nations. But of course, they're not united, are they? And they've got their own interests and their own leagues with the West and their own economic interest. And you could say that some of them just don't care about the Palestinians at all. So there's not a united front against Israel. And indeed, the Arab nations do business with Israel as well. So that, I think that's why Israel can survive. But definitely, that Israel is the main cause of instability in that region. And They're bringing us to the brink of world war with their actions, these crazy actions by psychopathic leaders.
Indeed, what a place to leave things on. And that does it for us. Charles Kelly and McNapier were our very special guests. And of course, our thanks to them and to you for being with us. Until next time, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts.
IB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom to discuss today's topic, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Nur Muhammad. Sheikh Mahdavi, salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Nur Muhammad, salam alaikum to you.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
All right, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the significance of the month of Shawwal, the month of Shawwal al-Mukarram. This is the 10th month of the Islamic lunar calendar in Islamic calendar, and the first day of this month was Eid al-Fitr. And in fact, this is a month that its first and its beginning starts with an Eid, and that is Eid al-Fitr. Sheikh Nur Muhammad, let's start first talk about the significance of the month of Shawwal, then we'll get to more details about this month.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know that the month of Shawwal actually is a month of reappearance of whatever you have been done and whatever you have